The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Hello everyone, welcome to the other side of the summer break. This is edition 251 of the NRF1 podcast, because Norfolk knows Formula One. We are sat here in the delightful Rushcutters Public House. It's a lovely late summer's day. Well, it's probably autumnal now, isn't it? Early autumnal day here in Norwich. The pub is looking resplendent as always. And we are going out on Future Radio as well as across all our podcast channels. In our eighth season, we are here to review the 2019 Belgian Grand Prix. I'm sports journalist Michael Bailey. Hello there, thank you for joining us. A big shout out to the wonderful Richard Baxter, who stood in for me once literally in front of me and another time without me being here. I really appreciate it, Rich, and you did a grand job, of course. I'm sure Rich will be taking the hot seat maybe once or twice over the rest of the season. Likewise, Perry Hamilton is, of course, adept at hosting these things too. But for tonight, you've got me. We'll do our main pod now, and there'll also be a bonus pod over at patreon.com, which you can catch too, so I hope you'll enjoy them. They might be slightly curtailed in time compared to previous efforts, but hopefully they'll pack in all the details and opinion and nice chat that you would wish to hear. I am with two times Beckles kart champion Kyle Cumbers.
Hello there.
Hey Kyle. And motoring journalist David Tillier. That's not because I didn't know what you were, Dave. I was just trying to remember what I'd literally written down.
Good evening. How's it going?
Good, thank you. I hope you're enjoying those chips. I've got some roasted nuts, which are currently stuck in my throat.
Chips are good. Chips are very much needed.
What was it? You're not eating since 11?
No, I very nearly stopped off at one of the many fast food chains on the way here, but I was running a little bit tight on time, so I wanted to be on time, but still hungry, so had to have something.
You've delivered it. Well done, well done. So we'll get stuck into the Belgian Grand Prix chat, as well as quite a lot of things that have happened since the summer. And again, apologies that the last two podcasts have been a bit late coming out. I hope you've had the chance to catch up on them. You should, by the way, because they're both really good podcasts, as well as the bonus ones over at Patreon. So make sure you catch all those, and then you can be up to date. So I hope you get to that point. But before we get stuck into the racing and the Formula One, of course, we have to pay our respects and send our love and thoughts to the family of Antoine Hubert, of course, was killed in a crash in the Formula Two race on Saturday, wasn't it? It was the feature race on Saturday. Truly horrible crash. These instances are never easy, and they always make us think about the sport that we love watching and what it means as a wider philosophical debate, I guess, over motorsport, its dangers, and trying to make something safe that probably will never be. I don't know how we ever reconcile those things. But what is clear, Kyle, is that Antoine was really highly thought of. He was only in his debut season, I think, wasn't he? So, but it seemed that he was already a guy that a lot of people liked and had really high hopes for.
Yeah, a lot of these last few days, you've seen the people sort of saying how he's a future star. It's his first year in F2, won two races already. I sort of kind of think it's impressive just to get to F2, isn't it? That's an achievement in its own, because there's only 20 drives in Formula 1, so the level below is pretty impressive. Yes, shame a young man has died far too young. But his family should be very proud of what he achieved to get to F2. Yeah, and hopefully, maybe F2 and the motorsport world can learn from things, but at the end of the day, as it says on most tracks, motorsport is dangerous. And he loves doing what he done. So, rest in peace.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm a bit of a shame to say I don't know a huge amount about him. At least not until after the accident, which is I feel slightly ashamed of. But from what I understand, he was really well respected within the paddock. Had lots of close friends, both within F2 and in F1. It seems to have shocked everyone within that world to the core. But everybody raced on, which I think they were saying is what he wanted, what he would have wanted, sorry. Like Carl said, it's such a shame for someone who's clearly a talent. Was he GP3 champion?
Yes.
So clearly a clear talent to be, the world has been robbed of someone. It's a shame when anyone dies doing something like this, but obviously he could have been a potential Formula One star.
It's incredible with his mum and dad, who are of course at the circuit. I don't think anyone who isn't at a circuit when something like that happens can fully appreciate what it must be like. It must be just a shockingly horrible experience. And Antoine's mum and dad were there and were shaking hands with the Formula One drivers, before the Belgian Grand Prix, to say, look, this is fine, do it, this is what Antoine would, and that, I think that it touches us all that they just get it in terms of what motorsport is, I suppose. I mean, we're talking about probably the most dangerous corner in the world, certainly in F1, for so many reasons. But likewise, before this weekend, if you'd asked me what my favourite corner is, I'd have probably said the same, because Eau Rouge and is it Eradion that it passes onto? It's just, it's just such an exhilarating place to watch the cars race through. So, I'm sure we'll obviously keep an eye on whatever comes about in terms of discussions over safety and what happens. But I think for now we'll leave our thoughts with Antoine and his family and friends, and of course we'll be keeping them in our thoughts and prayers going forward. Okay, well, let's reflect on the race, because, and obviously all the thoughts of what happened in the Formula 2 race will permeate through, but by the same token, Charles Leclerc has won his first Grand Prix, which, not wishing to labour a similar sentiment, but I think it was his 34th race, which was as many as Jules Bianchi had, and of course Charles is I can't remember what the relationship was.
Bianchi was godfather to...
That's right.
Yeah. Charles, yeah.
So, I mean, we're all over the symmetry here, of course. But actually, for Charles, in a purely motor racing sentiment, he'd had a couple of scratchy weekends, hadn't he? So what a way to return after the summer break and I guess do something that Sebastian Vettel couldn't.
Yeah, he's sort of probably a victory deserved. He should have won in Bahrain. Baku, he probably was the quickest going into the final stages of qualifying, but kind of blew it. But he's come back after, like I said, the summer break, and stamped his authority on Ferrari by the looks of it, especially how far he was ahead of Vettel in qualifying. It's sort of been an up and down year. No doubt he's unbelievably quick. It'll be interesting to see the second half of the year whether he can continue that and be number one in Ferrari. So interesting to see.
Which is kind of the point, isn't it, DT? We've spoken a lot about Sebastian Vettel's future without really anything being said or happening, but it was the first point you raised with me when we came in here tonight.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. One thing that I think we have to sort of consider is, at what point do Ferrari start getting behind Charles instead of Sebastian? Because I would say, overall, whilst Sebastian's still been quick this year, I don't think he's shown himself to be the driver that maybe we all expect him to be. And I think Charles Leclerc has, as far as I'm concerned, Charles Leclerc is still a rookie. So I think Charles showing an extra something that Vettel currently isn't showing. And I'm not, Charles hasn't been the most consistent, like we said. He's had some rocky weekends, but, like I say, I think he's, as far as I'm concerned, he's still, is this second season now?
Yeah.
So, for him to be up in not only in a top team in his second season, but a top team and now, you know, podiums and then wins, a win. It's pretty amazing. So I think it does sort of cast a light on Vettel in a way that he probably doesn't want. And he's either got to raise his game or Ferrari have got to start backing Charles. One of those two things has got to happen, I think. But it'll be interesting to see which one of those two things happens throughout the rest of the season.
It certainly will. I think Lee McKenzie did an interview with Sebastian Vettel before the Belgian Grand Prix. Did anyone catch it?
No.
Me neither. It was on and I didn't get it, so I'm going to cut this out. Worth reflecting on Mercedes too. I mean, they completed the podium, which is probably a bit of a recovery from where they were at the end of... although Lewis did, of course, win the Hungarian Grand Prix, but it got a little bit scratchy, didn't it? And, of course, the big news that came out right at the start of the restart, if you like, in Belgium, was that Valtteri Bottas will be a Mercedes driver next year. Did that catch... Did you feel that was a surprise when that was announced? Because it seemed like a lot of the music going into the break was... Valtteri's in trouble here, but I think there was a point at which Mercedes had to confirm him, so I don't know if they, buckled under the pressure of their own contract.
So I think they made a statement a while ago that it would be sorted over the summer break. That could have been due to a contract or just the way they wanted to do it. But you had before the summer, you had Toto Wolff sort of talking about his backup plans for Valtteri, and he'll land somewhere, and that all seems to suggest that if you're looking into that, are you moving him on? So I was a little bit surprised. I don't know what made that final decision, because he wasn't exactly great before the summer, was he? So
that's a great point. What actually happened to make them go, yeah, all right? Yeah. And it isn't what it doesn't feel is particularly inspiring. I mean, I know there's a degree of, and what happens if he has an absolutely terrible second half of the season?
Good point.
I mean, I guess what I'm saying is, I know they've confirmed it, but can they back out of it?
Yeah, because he's very good number two. But I kind of thought long term for Mercedes, because he just turned 30 over the summer, you kind of thought Lewis Hamilton's not going to be there. Well, we don't know how long Lewis Hamilton could be there, but would it make sense to have a young driver like Ocon learning off Hamilton coming through, and then he'll be ready when Hamilton suddenly goes? So yeah, but unless maybe the influence of Hamilton, maybe Hamilton's happy with Bottas as number two and team dynamics good.
I guess if they keep them together for another year, does, you know, George Russell stay at Williams or get another year under his belt somewhere else, so then after that year George can step up? But...
or maybe that's the other, maybe George Russell is the reason Bottas has got another year, because maybe they think Russell is better than Ocon long term, and they probably give Russell another year in Williams and instead of Ocon 1 year in Mercedes and then going thanks but no thanks, it's easier to keep Bottas for another year.
I tell you what, then let's move it on to Renault, shall we? Because it fits in nicely, because this is one of the other things that happened before the race, which is kind of what we're focusing on really for now. But interesting, isn't it? Esteban Ocon, he'll be at Renault next year, and so will Daniel Ricciardo, of course. So Nico Hülkenberg is currently without a seat, DT. Will it stay like that come March?
Well, it's interesting that they've opted to turn their back on Hülkenberg in a way, or at least it felt interesting. And then I started to think about it, and I thought, well, actually, Hülkenberg has been one of those drivers that's always had a lot of... he's been touted as something quite superb, but actually nothing has ever happened, realistically. Now, is that because he's just never been in the right car, or is it because he is good but he's not great? And I think Renault at the moment are trying to push themselves forward. Their plans haven't quite taken effect yet, but they're spending money, and they're trying to push themselves to have better seasons going forward. Obviously, now they've got Ricciardo in the car. Maybe they're thinking, right, we've got someone who's been around for a while, who's an older head who can sort of lead the team, and let's have someone who's young, hungry, and has got some untapped potential. Because that then leaves Hülkenberg, who is still very well regarded within the paddock, with no drive. and there are a few seats around the, in Formula One that potentially he could slip into. I wouldn't be hugely surprised if Haas were at least looking at him, because I think Roman Grosjean has basically sealed his fate. I think
there was a sorry moment where he got overtaken by two cars and I just looked at him and thought, yeah, you're done. This will be the moment on the next season of the Netflix doc where it's like, there's not going to be a, well, I mean, I probably would have said that 12 months ago. So.
This is the thing, I didn't expect them to keep him last year and they did, so I think Magnussen still is. Magnussen, I think, is still the best driver of the pairing at the moment, and I think Rogue has not done enough to sort of keep his seat, and certainly hasn't acted well enough, I think, in order to sort of keep in their good graces. So I think Haas would be mad not to try something different.
I mean, it is the dream team, isn't it? There'll be a lot of ball sucking going on if Nico is alongside K-Mag.
Well, that is the interesting thing, isn't it? They do have an interesting history.
That would be an episode of the Netflix doc.
Although I think K-Mag's probably upset most people on track
It'd just be a one-man team.
Question though, Hülkenberg, who would you prefer, if you were Mercedes, who would you prefer, Hülkenberg or Bottas?
Well, in fairness, I would probably have Bottas because I think he is more reliable. You kind of can see when he's going to have a bad weekend, generally. But he'll finish 8th or 9th, whereas Nico could be running 2nd and driving to a wall. I mean, and it's really interesting because I remember years ago speaking to the guys at Supernova when they were F2 team in Norfolk, and he was saying, oh, Nico Hülkenberg, he is the real deal. Just you wait, he'll win the World Championship. He's so good with his feedback. He's so this, so that, the other. And it's just... I guess sometimes a driver doesn't quite fulfil their potential, and that's it, because he's had the opportunities. He's had, we can talk about how many times he hasn't, races he's had without a podium, but he's had so many opportunities to deliver that. And like, someone like Max, if there is an opportunity, even like a 20% opportunity, you put your money on him taking it because he's just got the ability to do it. And for some reason, in a Formula One car, Nico hasn't been able to do it.
You compare him to Perez. Was Perez got 6 podiums? That's just off the top of my head.
Yeah.
And their careers have probably been very similar. Similar sort of car all these years. And it's 6 to none. And like I said, the opportunity like Brazil, a good few years ago. Was it early this year? Was the rain? When did it rain? Hockenheim.
That's it.
Yeah. Home Grand Prix. Was he 3rd or 4th at some point or whatever? Perfect opportunity for good result. And they're just... just goes wrong.
I mean, he wasn't the only one to drive on the track that day, but he was one of them who did, and I suppose that's the point, isn't it? Okay, well, we'll see a lot more from Renault and see how that all pans out, because it's never nice being the man out in the cold. I think Nico could probably speak to Daniel about that, Danny Rick, and how he dealt with that last year. Although slightly different circumstances, I suppose. I think there'll be a bit more sympathy for Nico than there was for Daniel. Yeah. Let's switch over quite neatly, actually, then to Red Bull, shall we? By the way, I was listening to your predictions, and I think you nailed that Max wouldn't win would go out of the race, would have a DNF, and you said that Charles would win. I think you got both those points. Yeah, I think so.
I can't remember, it's so long ago.
So you are back to being the uncle. Yeah, well, I only listened to it the other day, so it's fine. So well done. Red Bull, of course, doing the thing I was convinced they would not do, which was putting Alex Albon in Norwich's own. We have he might be Thai, but we've literally declared him as a Norwich own, not even Ipswich. Norwich's own Alex Albon is flown into the second seat, I suppose, let's be honest about it, at Red Bull. Got an engine penalty for changing an engine, which he might not have actually raced with. I don't know if anyone knows that. Maybe I shouldn't have said that. And put in a stunning performance to finish 5th? 5th, wasn't it?
Yeah.
How good was that drive? For his first drive in a Red Bull?
So this morning I watched the sort of supercut on the F1 YouTube channel of all his sort of overtakes and moments throughout the race. And if anyone hasn't seen it, go on to the F1 YouTube channel and give it a look. For a guy who's come from another team mid-season, who apparently had to rewire his brain in order to work out how to drive the Red Bull car because it was that different to the Toro Rosso, for a guy to have that kind of drive, and it wasn't like he was kind of sort of doing this sort of balls out kind of crazy drive to try and get through the pack. It was just very commanding, very assured, just right places, using speed, overtaking, and you know, just an absolutely superb drive. So I think fifth place from where he started is not only amazing, but for him to have had the drive that he had, given the fact that he's just literally just stepped into that car that one weekend, absolutely superb.
Yeah, I was worried the first half of the race because he didn't make a huge amount of progress. And I thought, this is why they got booted Gasly out. But the second half of the race was, yeah, really strong.
I suppose the degree of getting used to the car. I mean, to actually be in a race in the car, I suppose, is different to the other bit.
It seems Jesse struggled on the medium tyre and the soft tyre worked well, so that's just getting used to it. A new car and that. Maybe a little bit of nerves early on. Maybe got to the point where, I might as well give it a go and pulled off and get confidence and, I don't know. Because it must be incredibly hard to... It's the first weekend probably looking at Max Verstappen's data, isn't it? And you look at that and go, the bloody hell's he doing that? So, and the more pressure, you know, Toro Rosso, you can get away with a few bad races, but Red Bull now, if you do a bad race, everybody's on you. So, yeah, it's a good start. So, hopefully, he can carry on. Because I was worried that when he got promoted, there, it's too early. But then he sort of discussed how he's already been booted out of Red Bull once. So, I kind of think that's quite good in a way that he's been booted out. He's like, well, second turn, or second chance, that I'll give it a go. And if shit happens, you know. So, I'm looking forward to the rest of the year.
Yeah, and I don't think it's going to take many more performances like that. Bearing in mind, he probably won't be starting from the back of the grid again anytime soon. To probably get his seat confirmed for next year, which would just be phenomenal if he managed that. Talking about being booted out of Red Bull, I mean, it would have been a hideous weekend for Pierre Gasly, given obviously what happened to Antoine. So, I think we can probably take that into consideration. And it was just really interesting for me that they did opt to not promote Daniil Kvyat again. I think there's probably two drivers at Toro Rosso now who know that's where they're going to be for the foreseeable future, and that says a lot about the faith they do have in Albon. Okay, well, we haven't really spoken directly about the Belgian Grand Prix, so let's do that now, shall we? What did we enjoy the race itself? Was it a good one? Because we had a couple of good ones before it. So,
well, it's a fairly solid race. I don't think it's certainly far from the most exciting that we've had this year. But
imagine saying that, in May.
Yeah, Spa's always good.
I do love the track. What did you make of it all, Carl?
Yeah, it's good races. I mean, the last four, we've been spoiled for the last four races, but I think a race where you're not totally sure who's going to win the Grand Prix with a couple of laps to go is always good. And what, within a second, I think, at the top two, so. And yeah, Spa's good. So, it was a decent, not the best Spa Grand Prix, but it was a good Grand Prix.
We'll take it, most definitely, and it teased up the second half of the season nicely with a few subplots, of course. Let's go through our Of the Weekend awards, shall we? Rodolfo Gonzalez, Driver of the Weekend. Are we going to give it to Albon?
I think we shall.
Albon for me.
Yeah.
Paul Norris, a good Grand Prix. Apart from this, breaking down with a lap to go. Yeah.
Made that point quite forcefully, didn't he? That's a good shout. How about our Team Lotus Team of the Weekend? I've come in my Team Lotus cap, by the way. Hope everyone appreciates that. To be fair, Renault, 6th and 7th.
Oh, that's qualifying, sorry. Racing Point.
Oh.
Double points finish for them.
Well done, Lance Stroll. I always knew he had it in him. The walking
always weapon. Always a big fan of him.
Yeah.
I think it's.
I think that was what happened in the last pod, wasn't it?
Actually, probably Toro Rosso, 7th and 9th compared to Racing Point, 6th and 10th.
So. In Venice, that's where Pierre Gasly was finishing when he was with the Red Bull, so that's probably decent. They've done it in a slower car. Go on, then we'll go to Toto Rosso. How about Pastor Maldonado of the weekend? Anyone particularly disappoint you with their shenanigans? I mean, Max did get a bit of stick for his dive down the inside so early in a race when, he'd been in such good form.
Yeah, it looked like a man who was a bit desperate after making a bad start. It was slightly bizarre how he's then going down the straight and then seemed to get no feedback from turning his wheel quite a long way and then still decided to turn the corner.
I mean, Robert Kubica as well, I did notice he was massively off the pace, and also then didn't Latifi step in for FP1, I think, and he was pretty much behind him as well. At this point, I don't know if it's really working out for Robert, but that's not really his fault, given that he's working with limited use compared to some of the other drivers.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing about Kubica is, should they... I'm starting to think now is actually, should they have even put him in the car in the first place? It was an interesting sort of story for us to all talk about prior to the season, but now that we're most of the way, or a decent chunk of the way through the season, I think it was a very foolish decision to try and put him in the car, because they obviously had the data, so they must have known that he was, you know, not as, you know, because this is not Robert Kubica's true pace, so clearly he's not quite up to the task of sort of physically handling that car and delivering it. So, you know, George Russell is a great talent, yes, but so was Kubica. So, yeah, I don't think we'll see him in the car next year. I kind of hope for his sake that we don't see him in the car next year. So, but yeah, going back to Verstappen, it's his fault. I always find it funny, but, you know, they always come on the radio and say, oh, he hit me, he turned in on me, but you put yourself in that position on that corner, you're going to get hit, you know.
And he did.
So, yeah.
And finally, Giuliano Salvi, moment of the weekend. Obviously keeping it to the racing, of course.
I thought one earlier and I've forgotten it now. I really can't remember now. I did quite like the start with Norris. It was like he just avoided everything. It was like the films where some sort of explosions
like
everywhere. Yeah, explosions everywhere. Just sort of walks his way through. Yeah. So, that's quite good. I also just love that camera angle at the bottom of Eau Rouge. I'm just sitting there all day. Yeah.
Yeah. Especially when they stick other cars past him.
Albon on Perez, I think, to get that final, get that fifth place. Because there was an interesting sort of... Because he went for him into the bus stop, and then that forced Perez to sort of escape, didn't he? And then they sort of didn't really work. They were sort of both... I think Perez was trying to let Albon back through, but Albon was not trying to overtake Perez. It was really weird. And so he waited till they got through Eau Rouge, and he's like, no, I'm going to take you now. And then put one little wheel on the grass, and it was bizarre, but it was quite entertaining.
It says all about his racecraft, though, doesn't it? That's the thing.
Do you reckon Perez was trying to just let him by, or were they just trying to not get over the DRS line first?
I don't know. It was either... It looked like they were both backing off.
Yes.
And I was watching, going, are they telling them that one needs to let the other one through because one's cut the corner, and is the other one thinking that he can't overtake him because he forced him off the track? And, you know, what's quite good? You know, I don't know. But yeah, either way, it was quite entertaining.
I love it. Okay, let's give the race a rating out of 11. I'm not up to date with these, apologies, but. But I reckon we're talking between 7 and 8.
I was thinking 7.5. So.
There you go.
Yep.
Yeah, I was thinking 7.
Oh, I'll say 7.25 just to give myself a sum. Brilliant. Okay, well, don't forget, you can always get in touch with us. The best place to start is Patreon, where the website and the app, and you'll be able to listen to our bonus podcasts. They're all there now, and there'll be a bonus one straight after this pod. That is patreon.com/NRF1. You can also get in touch with us over at Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. The handle for all three of those is @NRF1. And email us if you wish, nifonepodcast@gmail.com. We are going to talk 2021 rules, or DT is, and then me and Carl are going to listen. We will also do our predictions for Monza, which is, of course, coming up, as well as a little chat about the race ahead. If you're going to get your predictions in, please do so. You use any of those contact channels I've just mentioned, and all you need to do is get them to us before the start of FP1. The only caveat is you need there is a limit of 5 predictions that you can make. Other than that, fill your boots. If you are a Patreon, then once we get to the end of the season, we'll have worked out who won which respective Grand Prix weekend, and you'll get a voucher if you were the best scorer at a Grand Prix weekend. Of a £5 voucher for either the Classic Team Motors shop or motorsport-merchandise.com. So that's very exciting. We'll tally up all those credits, and then you can get whatever you want when we get to the end of the season. But for now, I think that's where we will leave it. Thank you so much for listening. We always appreciate it. We will do EP251 over on Patreon exclusively. That will follow this podcast, so make sure you have a look out for that. In the meantime, a big thank you to Future Radio, to the Rush Cutters, and to these gentlemen. Thank you, DT.
Good to be back.
Thank you, Kyle.
Thank you.
Thank you, all of you guys, for listening. And we will be back to look ahead to Monza, and then, of course, the other side of Monza with our review of the Italian Grand Prix over on Audio Boom and all the various podcast channels. Until then, have a very good night.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your 2 free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.